On an evening in early December 2018, the young CEO of a cryptocurrency exchange reportedly dies while on his honeymoon in India. This death is not announced to customers for another month. And when they're told Gerald Cotton is the only person to hold the passwords to their funds, conspiracy theories grow, leaving some to wonder, could Gerald Cotton still be alive?
Honeymoon, moving the body, all the missing money. It was like, but what happened?
A Death in Cryptoland. Available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Coming up on The Cost of Living.
And I would put money on it being the same guy that probably stole it both times. He's like, oh, that car came back. It's got a new catalytic converter for me to steal. Fresh catalytic.
A lot of Canadians know the sting of getting their catalytic converter stolen. Not many have lost two in a row like Karen Lewin. That just feels mean. But it wasn't personal. They were after her rhodium. Hi, I'm Paul Havertrud. Welcome to The Cost of Living. We know thieves are good at, well, stealing. But did you know they also have their finger on the pulse of the global market for precious metals? If you watch those prices, it could tell you what they're looking to swipe next. Also today, electric vehicles were so new for so long that buying used wasn't really possible. But now there is inventory and deals. Up first, when you think emergency, you may think sirens blaring, stuff burning, something needs to be done urgently. And right now, more people are saying that about Canada's economy. Bank of Canada Deputy Governor Carolyn Rogers gave a speech recently, and this got people's attention.
You know those signs that say, in an emergency, break the glass? Well, it's time to break the glass.
If you're a central banker, that's like yelling fire in a theater. So what's she talking about? Canada's economic productivity. It's been a worry for like 30 years. So why now is it time to break the glass? Productivity is like the slow-moving train of economic crises. If it lags for a few years, nothing much changes. But what happens after 5 years, or 10, or 20? Well, let's compare life in Canada to life in a country where productivity hasn't kept up. Argentina. If you go back 100 years, our economic productivity was about the same. Then Canada's took off, and Argentina's didn't. Amelia McGoldrick moved to Buenos Aires from Toronto 13 years ago. She's a photographer. She went to visit a friend and decided to make it home. What differences does she see?
Things are hard to get here. Electronics are extremely expensive here. So, for example, I have to shoot a little wedding and I realize that my battery charger for my flash doesn't work. And the batteries and a charger is 169,000 pesos. So that's $160 for a charger with four batteries.
In Canada, that charger would cost more like 20 bucks. Amelia says that's par for the course in Argentina. Anything imported there will almost definitely be more expensive. And that's if it's available.
The grocery stores look way different than they do. When I go home to a grocery store in Canada, because there's so much choice and there's so many aisles and they're stocked full. Like if I go to my grocery store, there's like nothing on the shelves. We had a huge mosquito issue here, like, and there was no bug spray. Like it was a huge problem. And like on the expat groups on Facebook and whatnot, when the shelves are empty, they don't replenish things quickly or it's difficult to. And then sometimes things just vanish altogether.
In other ways, she says living in Argentina isn't all that different from Canada. The cell phone service is good. So is healthcare. But the hospitals aren't that new, and wait times can be long. She likes living there. Good people, weather, food. But at the same time,
it can be really trying on your patients. Things just don't work here the way that they do elsewhere. So it's just sort of like, I don't know, you just take it all in stride, I guess.
Paul Beaudry says that's exactly what you'd expect when you think about someone living in a country with lower productivity. He's an economics professor at the University of British Columbia.
You'd have someone that's kind of would have a much smaller house that would have, you know, much less kind of capacity to kind of go on vacation. The health system will not be kind of supporting it the same way. Where's the median person? What kind of way do they live? And what kind of things do they have access to? And there's a lot of aspects that you have a lot less.
Productivity can be defined as the output you get from what you put in. Here's an example the Bank of Canada uses to explain it. Think about a baker who can make 5 dozen cookies an hour. To do that, they need mixing bowls, flour, an oven, labor. If that baker gets a new mixer and can then make 6 dozen cookies an hour, that's their productivity going up. They can sell more cookies, make more money. Personally, they can buy more stuff. Governments get more tax revenue.
Productivity allows you to kind of have something that's going to be better for a lot of people. If you don't have the higher productivity, you won't be able. It's not even in the options. So I always think productivity is a necessary condition to have our living standards increase.
He says you can draw a straight line between productivity and our standard of living. That covers everything from the quality of a country's education system and healthcare, poverty levels, how much money people have to buy stuff. Think about how long it takes to save up to buy something. Like, how many hours of work does it take to buy a cell phone? The answer to that question is very different depending on where you live.
If you want an iPhone, maybe in, you know, a rich country, you kind of think, oh yeah, well, that's the equivalent of, you know, 3 days or 5 days or 10 days of work, as opposed to a month or 2 months of work. And that's really what we call productivity. So asking just the price is not very informative. It's really relative to kind of the amount of time you have to work to kind of get that.
Canada's economic productivity is still going up, but barely. And we're falling behind other countries. Germany, Sweden, France, Ireland, they're all doing better than us. That means their standard of living is improving faster.
Among the kind of more advanced economies, almost only one has really done worse than us, and that's Italy. But besides that, we're kind of on that bottom part of the group in among advanced economies.
We're not expected to get off the bottom anytime soon. When the OECD ranked 38 countries on expected productivity growth over the next 40 years, it put Canada last. So why is our productivity so poor? Well, pick a reason. Not enough competition. Interprovincial trade barriers, businesses don't invest enough. How about homegrown companies take their billion-dollar ideas to the U.S. instead of staying here? So how do you even start fixing any of this?
First of all, I think it has to be put on the political agenda as a real priority. That means kind of having it at the discussion at many levels to kind of say, you know, figuring out in the regulation, do we have the right regulations that are helping? Do we have incentives that are kind of getting business to grow and stay in Canada? Do we have kind of coordination across provinces? So it's a lot of all these little pieces, probably all of the ones that you've heard already, little parts. So it's not like I'm being very kind of innovative here. But you need to kind of get them all working together and recognizing that this is really an issue.
For as much as we're now worrying about productivity, it's still a, we'll get around to it kind of thing. Like so many long-term issues, the productivity problem is insidious. Life is pretty good, pretty good, pretty good, and then it's less good. When Paul Beaudry looks at this country's problems, he sees lagging productivity starting to hit home. Wages aren't keeping up with inflation. Life is getting more expensive. Millennials and Gen Z wonder if they'll ever own a home.
You know, if you take younger people and ask them, do they feel that they have a future that's kind of growing? You start getting maybe questions that are kind of a little bit less clear on that front. Like I say, we were still growing for a while, just growing a bit slower and kind of you know, it wasn't so noticeable. And then slowly, as we're stagnating more and more, then this difference of kind of noticing, oh, okay, are we kind of offering to our children the same future that other countries are offering to their children? And that's the type of aspect that kind of brings more of the crisis, I think.
Canada's biggest play to fix productivity is immigration. The idea being that more people will help spur innovation and the economy. But we've also thrown a lot of other stuff at the wall. We've made billions available for research. You might remember the Innovation Superclusters plan. But is any of this enough to fix the problem?
I do think that recognition is percolating. I do think we're getting it more on the general kind of discussion. But I don't see, for example, any political party at this point that's really putting it up there as kind of a major platform and saying this is really where we have to do things and kind of move forward.
When you look at almost any ranking of best countries in the world to live, Canada is almost always near the top. Life here has been sweet for a long time. And it's not like we're going to become Argentina overnight. But for a lot of years, Argentina probably didn't think that either.
I'm Dr. Brian Goldman, host of the CBC podcast, The Dose. Each week, we answer health topics in a smart and sometimes counterintuitive way you won't hear anywhere else. Like, what's the least amount of exercise I can do to get the benefits? Which psychedelics can improve my mental health? And how can I check for cancer if I don't have a family doctor? Top experts help me bring you what you need to know in plain language in about 20 minutes. Find The Dose on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
On your radio and by podcast, this is The Cost of Living. I'm Paul Habershrood. A new car famously loses like 20% of its value when you drive it off the lot. So the mantra of the value shopper is, why buy new when used will do? Only, what if you wanted an EV? Electric vehicles were so new for so long that used wasn't an option. Until lately. And now, if you're looking to buy, our producer Ellis Cho finds the price could be right.
Over the last 50 years, Jim Smith has driven everything from a Ford Galaxy to a Mercedes Roadster. But his favorite?
It's way more fun to drive than anything. And
his Tesla Model 3.
And it's just a beautiful car. It's a very high quality car.
He bought it 5 years ago. Now he's traded up for a bigger one. So his 2019 Tesla is up for sale and has been for 6 months.
Just because I started too high and then I keep lowering the price, but the price keeps going down faster than I'm lowering it. And I just regret not just trading it in the first place. It would have been a lot less hassle.
The number of used electric vehicles for sale is growing. There are four times more used EVs on AutoTrader today than 5 years ago. It's a buyer's market.
So if you're in the market, if you're on the fence, there's definitely a good time to be looking for a used EV, 100%.
Barish Akurek is with AutoTrader.ca. He says supply is up because the new car market is back to normal. Car lots are full, and the earliest EV adopters are now trading up.
And from data, we know that 50% of the time when a new car is sold, there's a used car attached to it.
At the same time, demand across the country has slowed. According to data analytics firm J.D. Power, it takes nearly twice as long to sell a used Tesla today than it did a couple of years ago. So now, prices are dropping. Barish says since last year, the price of a used EV has come down by more than 10%. Greg Layson is with Automotive News Canada. He says trying to figure out the resale value of an EV is tricky, partly because of what's happening with new EVs.
Tesla, if you want to go there, has really put a dent in the resale value of electric vehicles because they slashed their prices of new models. So why would I buy a used one when all of a sudden they're slashing prices of new ones? So the used market for electric vehicles is very, very new, very, very finicky, very unpredictable.
But if you're looking for a deal in the secondhand market, Greg says you need to ask,
how old is this thing? How many kilometers are on it? How many hours of battery has been used? How many hours are on it? How old is the battery? Has it ever been replaced? If there's still some warranty left, it is key. Are there any recalls on it? Is another question you have to ask. These are all the things you need to know.
He says any car under 5 years old is probably a safe bet. But until the technology becomes more mainstream,
to me, I'd be going over that with a fine-tooth comb only because it's still newish technology, right? It's not like every mechanic on the corner, every mom-and-pop mechanic knows how to fix these things.
Even though it's been on the market for 6 months, Jim Smith isn't worried about selling his Tesla. And he's not worried about all the competition.
I think that's a good thing because for the EV transition, I think a lot of people don't buy new cars. So to have a lot of used cars on the market is really, it's really good. You know, it's just it's the future.
For the cost of living, I'm Ellis Cho.
Imagine this. You wake up and you start getting ready for work. Then you go to your car, you turn it on, and hear, ooh, that ain't good, Daniel Nerman.
No, not good at all. That is a car that's had its catalytic converter cut out of it.
Yeah, and a lot of people know what that's like.
Yeah, it's happened to three of my neighbors. One was stolen in broad daylight, and the car was super low to the ground, so they wiggled underneath it, cut it out. School buses have been targeted, even Canada Post delivery vans.
And from what I've heard, the thieves doing this, they are slick. Like, as you say, they wiggle into your car, and it's like boom, boom, gone in seconds.
Yeah, just ask Karen Lewin. She lives in Calgary, and last year, she had her catalytic converter stolen twice in the same month.
I would put money on it being the same guy that probably stole it both times. He's like, oh, that car came back. Oh, it's got a new catalytic converter for me to steal. Fresh catalytic.
The first time it happened outside her house and she got it replaced. Then she decided she wanted to put a shield under the car so it wouldn't get stolen again. So she took it to her mechanic and
I decided to leave my car at his shop overnight in the lot, just being like, oh, yeah, like I've left it here many times before. I roll into the shop in the morning, like everything seems great. And I walk out to the car and I turn it on and the guys in the shop, they heard it right away. And they were like, oh, my God, no way.
Come on.
Stolen right from the garage. But you know what? I've got good news for Karen and everyone else who owns a combustion engine.
Well, I think Karen wants to hear it. What is it?
So in the last year, catalytic converter thefts have plunged. I reached out to police across the country. Almost all of them say this kind of crime is dropping. And just to give you an example, in 2022, Winnipeg police had 1,800 catalytic converter thefts reported to them. This year, they've had 12.
That's like nothing. It's like this problem just like poof, it just evaporated. What happened?
It comes back to what's going on in the market for industrial metals. The reason thieves target catalytic converters is because they contain precious metals. Rhodium, palladium, and platinum.
Well, those are your fancy metals right there.
Very fancy. You know, platinum, a lot of jewelry is made out of it. And palladium isn't cheap either. But rhodium, that is the big money in catalytic converters. 3 years ago, when theft rates were going through the roof, rhodium was at an all-time high, $29,000 per ounce.
Well, how much rhodium is there in a catalytic converter?
So each one may only contain a teeny tiny speck of rhodium, like less than a tenth of an ounce. But it adds up. On some bigger vehicles, catalytic converters were fetching $1,000 a piece at scrapyards.
You said were fetching. They're not anymore?
No. The price of rhodium has tanked. In the last 3 years, it's dropped almost 85%.
Why?
So most of the world's rhodium comes from South Africa. And about 4 years ago, that country's biggest processing plant had an explosion. This was a massive accident. It was shut down for months, and it caused a shortage. And it just sent rhodium prices soaring.
But now that's fixed.
Yeah, the plant has reopened. And then there's another thing that's helping stabilize supply. More countries are recycling scrap metal. In 2022, nearly a quarter of the world's supply of rhodium, palladium, and platinum came from recycled catalytic converters. But also, more people are buying EVs.
And they're electric. They don't need catalytic converters.
No, electric cars don't have exhaust pipes. Catalytic converters clean up harmful emissions that come out of combustion engines.
Right. So then what does all this mean for people who were stealing the catalytic converters? I mean, for a long time for them, like, business was good.
Yeah, well, it's not as good anymore. And I asked Dov DeMont about the trade-in value of what scrappers call CATs. He owns Capital Salvage, a metal recycler in East Vancouver.
The Volkswagens had a really expensive CAT just coming off of, like, Jetta's Gulf. That was one of, the easiest, most lucrative ones to steal. And, yeah, those were $300-$400 a pop. So now, you know, you'd be looking at about $100, maybe $125.
So if they're not really paying out and you're a thief, is it really worth your time?
I mean, if you're taking that kind of risk, the money has to be worth it. And as I mentioned, you know, thefts have gone down in Winnipeg, but the same thing has happened in Halifax, Edmonton, Calgary, and Surrey, BC. Several insurance companies also are reporting fewer claims, like State Farm in the U.S. and Aviva Canada. Between 2022 and 2023, the Insurance Corporation of BC saw a 35% drop in catalytic converter thefts.
And we're sure there's a direct connection between rhodium prices dropping and catalytic converter thefts going down.
Well, there's actually been a study that looked at it. Mirko Draka is at Warwick University in the UK. He teaches economics. And a few years ago, he compared metal prices on the world markets to crime rates in London, England. And what he found was a 10% increase in prices led to a 10% increase in crime.
Prices go up, crime goes up. Prices go down, crime goes down. It sort of tracks it like a caterpillar. So in terms of chasing incentives, the only people more rational than criminals are academic economists.
I have this image of like this street level thief checking the market every morning, you know, waking up, drinking coffee, going, oh, hey, look at that. Good day for rhodium. Let's steal some cats.
Right. But, you know, when you look at the drop in thefts, price isn't everything. Constable Danny McKinnon is with the Winnipeg Police Service. She says it's also getting really hard to sell stolen catalytic converters to scrap yards.
The new regulations under the Scrap Metal Act, which is a provincial act, have made it so difficult. You know, you need to have checks and balances. Every ID is taken, VIN numbers are taken, and then the police are able to come in at any time saying, let's have a look at these records. So it just became such a hassle. And we've found that the scrappers have just stayed above board on this.
And if you can't turn it into cash, why would anyone steal something?
And this is not just happening in Manitoba. This kind of targeted enforcement is happening across Canada. And it's really helped stamp out the black market for scrap metal. Also, catalytic converters are more traceable now. RCMP and police have launched free etching services where you can have your VIN number, your vehicle identification number, engraved right into your catalytic converter.
So then does all this mean the worst is over for this kind of theft?
For now, but that could change if metal prices tick up again. Mirko Draka says it wouldn't be the worst idea to keep a close eye on the commodities market.
In the future, the police and the local government should keep track of prices and sort of implement some notion of predictive policing, right? So when police see prices go up, they could do a public information campaign about securing vehicles and securing catalytic converters.
So rhodium prices spike.
Time for another friendly PSA.
Catalytic Converter Awareness Month.
Yeah.
Thanks, Danielle.
You're welcome.
Coming up on next week's show, how easy did it used to be to get a mortgage?
You know, many, many years ago, back almost three decades when I started in the mortgage business, you could get a mortgage finished with about 6 to 9 pieces of paper. Things have changed. Sometimes we have, just for down payment alone, we've seen the level of paperwork go as high as 150 images just of various bank statements.
Banks now want all the documentation before they give you a loan. They want to make sure you're not a bad guy using Canadian real estate to launder your money. That's next week. And we also have a question and answer show coming up soon. So, what are you curious about? Like, not, do you wonder why do bad things happen to good people, but more, you know, businessy type curiosities. In the past, you've asked everything from why a nice bottle of vino that comes all the way from France can be cheaper than wine made here at home to, is Canada's federal debt really a worry? So, what's on your mind? Give us a call and let us know. Our number is 1-866-550-COST. That's 1-866-550-2678. Or email costofliving@cbc.ca. The show is based in Calgary. The Cost of Living is produced by Daniel Nerman, Ellis Cho, and Jennifer Keane, with help from Caroline the Little Alligator Ferris. Our executive producer is Tracy Johnson. I'm Paul Habershrood. Thanks for listening.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.